The boys have a virtual horror fest as they begin in the past with 1932's classic Freaks. Does Todd Browning's masterpiece still hold up to horror of today's standards? They then head to the theater to check out the prequel by the same name, The Thing. Does it compare to John Carpenter's 1982 version, or should they have just left it frozen in the ice? Finally, they review the trailer for the fourth movie in the Underworld series, Underworld Awakening. Will Kate Beckinsale's Celine draw them back into the theater in 2012? All this, and they chat about John Lasseter's defense of Cars 2, and the possibility of River Phoenix's posthumous return to the big screen. It's the 75th reel of COL Movies. Holy jumping Christmas!
The past.
You tell me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You're listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. It's reel number 75. My name is Jeff. I would like to introduce my what type of co-host are we this time?
Blank.
My blank co-host, Steve and Ray. How are you guys doing?
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm blank.
Well, since we're all blank, let's go right into the news.
News on the mark!
John Lasseter defends Cars 2. Defends?
Defends. Well, you know, it was the first Pixar movie to get, like, negative reviews. So he was sort of on the defensive. I think he is kind of, like, you know, the big boy at Pixar, and this was the first movie he's directed in a while, so I think he kind of took it personally. But there's been some accusations that, like, Disney forced them to make the movie, that it was all to make money and blah, blah, blah. And he gets pretty into it. It's a pretty interesting article. Not only does it go talk about Cars 2, but it also talks about sort of Pixar in the post-Steve Jobs era, you know. How are they going to survive without Steve? And he goes on to say, you know, like, well, we were never an executive-driven company, so I think we're in a perfect, you know, we're in a perfect position to survive without Steve, though they're going to, you know, miss him, and he did provide them with input. But I just thought it was interesting because it was, you know, if, you know, Pixar's got sort of this glowing, sort of untarnished, you know, reputation, and this was really the first sort of chink in the armor. I mean, I know Cars didn't get that great of reviews either, but it never really got to the negative. This was the first, like, oh, this movie was no good, it had no soul, and blah, 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 and they just did it to make money. And so I thought it was interesting that he actually spoke out. Now, do you guys think that the timing of this, right previous to the DVD Blu-ray release, is a little suspect, or
Doesn't it mention that he says something in the commentary on the DVD?
He might.
Or was I reading something wrong in here? But I think that was one of the reasons. It's like, okay, so maybe they were focused on working on the movie or on the DVD, or they were, you know, working on what's next, you know. And being like, this is not a higher priority. We know what the critics are saying. People liked it anyway. So moving on, we're gonna go on. We'll get back to this later. Had a little lull. Time to defend. Perfect timing because it's right when the DVD is going to come out. This will also spark some interest. So this could be a little bit of a marketing because it just happened to be that time to say, hey, here's what I have to say about this. So everybody's, your opinions are fine, and these critics who said it negative, who reviewed it negatively, well, don't listen to them. Listen to what you liked about the movie, because you went to see the movie, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a financial success. It's not like it bombed in any sense of the word. It's the first time they've really received any negative criticism, so. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it did come out in amid the sea of some, amid, you know, like a bunch of different animated movies this summer.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like a one animation summer.
Right.
This year there were a ton of different things that came out. So I suppose this year perhaps the critics were being critical of all that stuff, because, you know, Pixar is the standard. And right. So if you know that a Pixar movie is coming out, all these other movies better live up to the Pixar movie. And I think maybe they finally showed a chink in their armor as far as dominance, if a couple other things got reviewed a little ahead of them. So
yeah,
maybe that's what they're facing a little bit. Now people are going after them.
People, right. Maybe people are just expecting so much because, I mean, look at all three Toy Stories. All of them were great.
Yeah.
And they're not expecting something that's not that high of a quality. Cars 2 was just a fine film. It was perfectly good, and I thought it was worth going to see. It's just, you know, it's not one of their best films, but hey, you can't win them all, and they were on a nice hitting streak, and it wasn't a bomb even with that.
So, right. No, I do like what he says at the end of the article, where, you know, they asked him, does negative reviews hurt him? And he basically said, you know, I don't read reviews. He goes, I make movies for that little boy who loves the character so much that he wants to pack his clothes in a Lightning McQueen suitcase. And to me, that's totally like, that would be my motivation too. Like, and seriously, like, he makes the movies for like the little kid in me, you know? So it's like, I'm down with that.
Sounds good.
Agreed. Yeah. Moving on. River Phoenix is going to return to the screen. Wait, what?
Yeah, it's hard to believe he's been dead since 1993.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's been a long time. For those that don't really remember Mr. Phoenix, you know, I'm surprised we haven't talked about this movie on this show yet, but My Own Private Idaho, he was awesome in that. Stand By Me, which is one of my favorite.
Oh yeah, one movies. Of the favorite all times.
You know, he was amazing in that. When he died, he was working on a film called Dark Blood, and that film sort of just sat uncompleted for till now, apparently. And the director has sort of gone in and re-edited the stuff and added some voiceovers, and he's really ready to release it. I guess he has plans to have Joaquin Phoenix to finish the voiceover as River's character. So it'll be really sort of interesting if it comes out, because we haven't seen anything from him and a good long time. It might be really strange to see how a movie too from 1993 to see how it holds up that we haven't even seen. Will we be able to date it immediately? You know.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention, it's scaring me that Joaquin's involved since he's like pretty much a wackadoodle.
Oh, I think that whole family is just a little off.
Okay. So. True.
Had a brother named River.
River Joaquin.
Yeah. Yeah. They all have interesting names. Even the daughter has an interesting name. I can't remember it right now.
Yeah, they're all. It's like, well, I think they're like hippie parents that, like, you know. I don't know. I saw a documentary on their family a long time ago, and I remember that they were all a little strange.
Kind of like Frankie Zappa's kids.
Yes. Yeah.
Moon Unit Dweezil. I forgot what the other one was, but I thought that was more of a normal name, quote unquote.
Frank. No, I'm kidding. That's Frank. That's the daddy.
Yeah.
In any case, and that's the news. Hey, what do you know? Not much. So moving on into the past.
You're telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
Why don't you back a little bit further? Just a couple years from our last movie, from 1934 to 1932, with Todd Browning's Freaks, starring Wallace Ford, Lila Himes, and Olga Baklanova.
Well,
so Baklanova. Hour 4 minutes. Yeah, they made movies short way back when. Maybe it was just because of the number of reels they needed to use or something.
I don't know. You know, when you think of the movie length, because that was like one of the first things I looked at, because I know when we watched The Black Cat, I was like, oh, this movie's only like an hour long. Sweet, you know. And I looked at the length for this, and I'm like, wow, this movie's like an hour and 4 minutes. It's like, wow, cool. Did anybody watch the bonus material on the DVD? Because the the bonus material.
Yeah, I downloaded.
The bonus material was longer than the movie.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it had a documentary on all of the people that were in the whole cast.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was a really interesting watch. So if you're interested at all in the actual people who were, you know, playing these characters, because I think it's, was it you, Steve? Did you put on there that these people weren't CGI, man. These were the real deal.
Yep. I did see a really interesting, there's also a documentary that's available on Netflix in the documentary section about exploitation movies and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the movies that they really highlighted in that whole genre as well. You know, like they were talking about what were the first movies to really kind of exploit people's differences, because they were talking about, you know, sexploitation and blaxploitation and, you know, all that kind of stuff too. And they really harped on this one being one of the first ones to really put people's differences up on the screen and exploit it for success.
I mean,
it was just an interesting perspective that they went on it with, you know.
But do you think, here's the thing, though, and this kind of wraps into the other item I have on here. Do you think it's considered exploitative only because of the time that it was released? Like, if this movie was made today with the actual people instead of actors or CGI or whatever, do you think we would consider it exploitative?
I don't know. You know, that's a good question, because I don't feel like it's typically exploitative if, like, say you had, you know, but sideshow freaks today are like people who have made themselves that way a lot of times. You're like the people who have, like, you know, bolted huge things through their tatas and, like, you know, carry 500 pound weights on them, you know, stuff like that, you know, or, you know, like they are trained kind of stuff like that. I think today people would have a, you know, a shit fit if they were like, look at the one-legged man, you know, or whatever, and somebody was really sitting there, you know. I think there would be people protesting, you know what I mean? Like,
you know what, though? I think because I watched the documentary that was attached to this, which focused solely on these people.
Yeah.
A lot of them, this is what they did for a living.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they were being paid, you know, by the side, this, you know, this is how they lived and made money I'm trying to remember his name. He went under Prince Randian. Randian, yeah, that's it.
A man with no arms or legs.
No arms.
The habit of lurking in dark corners and frightening passersby with a blood-curdling yell.
I mean, he was married, had children, you know.
Yes, he was fully functional.
Yeah. I mean, but they talked about how normal of a life he did lead, you know, other than being part of the freak show. So, sure.
I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I get how all that came about, you know, and why it would be, you know, beneficial to some people who might not otherwise feel connected. You know what I mean? And not to mention, I mean, like, you're with people who have similar issues to you. You actually have a support group, you know, for lack of a better term. And it didn't look like, you know, at least from this movie, if sideshows were really like that, and that's the kind of, you know, way they got to travel and see the country and do all that kind of stuff, like, it looked pretty decent, you know?
Well, there was a guy on the documentary that was a, I don't know to what degree he was a performer associated with quote unquote freak shows, But, you know, he said that this movie is unique in the fact that it does show pretty realistically what went on, you know, behind the scenes, you know, how there was sort of like this sense of community and camaraderie with all these people. And, you know, on the other side of the coin, there was also, you know, some, you know, hatred and, you know, like they were their own group and everyone else that worked for, you know what I mean? There was a, there was a little bit of both division and, you know, and it's kind of funny because I'm looking, when I was watching this, the first thing is I'm like, well, this is really sort of soap opera-ish to me.
Yeah, kind of, you know, came off that way.
Up until the very end. So I was like, really? I'm like, what was it about this that made it consider? I mean, because I read about some of the trivia and it was banned in a lot of places. And they went through a lot to get it through censors. And so, I mean, do you think that it's just a natural evolution over time that, like, the types of things that made people in 1932, you know, freak out, like, freak the heck out. You know, obviously, if this movie were to come out today, we would be like, yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah.
I think it was sort of, it was the topics and stuff, not, you know, along with the, because, you know, they're talking about, you know, I don't want to say adultery necessarily, but they're talking about cheating. You know, they were talking about murder, plotting to murder. You know, they were talking about all these kinds of things. And then you, on top of all of that, had, you know, the people themselves in this movie that were, you know, at that time, you know, they were still showing, what was it? They're still showing sex films and baby, how to have a baby films and all kinds of stuff, you know, to, as exploitive, you know, if you read into the back, you know, like, you know, they were pretty much showing like births on screen, you know, stuff like that, that were like, you know, so there's a lot of stuff going on that probably just really pushed people in the 30s. You know, just to, you know, really just push societal boundaries. That's probably why.
Well, and one of the, well, I mean, because like one of the things that they said they had to be very careful with in the film was the whole relationship between Hans, who is Harry Earls, you know, and Cleopatra, who was Olga Baklanova, that they had to be really careful with that because that, in that relationship, that implied relationship, Even though they never really showed them doing anything, there's like this implied intimacy, you know. That was like one of the biggest and most controversial things. Like, how could they even suggest that these two people would be together and, you know, get married? And oh my God, does that mean they're sleeping together too? Oh, you know, like.
Well, I mean, imagine if it had been like, you know, an interracial couple on screen. You know, it's like people, two people, like he's a little boy person at that time. You know, he's a little person. He's supposed to be with the little person. You know, he's not supposed to be with, you know, this big, tall woman, you know, and, you know, that's kind of the whole thing about it.
And the other thing that I thought was interesting was that, you know, she was playing his wife in the movie, which was her name was Daisy Earls, but she was actually his sister. In the movie, there was the Earls family. There was four of them that came over from Germany to the United States, and they were all, they were called the family of the dolls because they were all these little tiny people. So yeah, that was his sister, which is a reason why you didn't see, very much or the same sort of implied intimacy between the two of them, because it was known that they were brother and sister, and it would have been even worse for them. So I just thought it was funny, you know, and you know, when movies like today, like, you know, The Human Centipede and The Human Centipede 2 come out, and everyone's like, oh my God, that's so disgusting and gross, and you know, it always seems to be a thing, like every year there's a movie that comes out that's like, oh, you know, we had to cut out so much stuff to see this, or it's being released on DVD only because it can't be released in theaters. And I mean, can you even imagine what sort of things would be released? And I mean, are they going to look back in, you know, 30, 40 years at The Human Centipede and be like, hell, this is reality TV. We have this stuff, you know.
This was one of the most popular movies back in 2011.
You know, are they going to re-release that in, like, you know, it's going to be a room, a theater full of giggling teenagers watching it because it's so silly. You know, and that just freaks me out to think of it that way. Like, you know, in the future, they're going to be laughing at stuff that we're just, like, so disturbed by.
Right.
But it just seems a natural evolution. It seems that's just the way it goes. You know.
Well, what did you guys ultimately think of this movie? The reason I put it on here, I hadn't seen it before, you know, before I put it on the list. But I put it on here because I kept seeing over the years, like, this is major horror movie, and of course we're doing horror this month, you know, so I was like, well, you know, I've never seen this and I should see it.
I thought it was really, I've said this before many times, I have this sort of thing about, I have a hard time getting into older movies.
Yeah, me too.
Movies from the 30s, 40s and 50s, I have a really hard time getting into them, so I've made a concerted effort to try to inject that sort of into the show coming up in the future, to kind of break that of try to break myself of that. But I really, you know, once I got over that initial sort of voice in the back of my head going, oh, this movie's in black and white and it's shot really weird and I can tell that there's a dude holding the camera and blah, once I got over that and got into the story, I mean, I was actually into it. You know, I was really into the story. I really got into the fact, I think, that the characters were all real people.
Yeah.
I think that helped because I really did sort of feel some empathy for some of these people. Like, oh, my God, this person has to live this way every day. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know.
Well, I would agree. I mean, I think, like, when I see, you know, Born on the 4th of July, using an example, and I see, you know, you know, something like that, or things, you know, where I know, like, that person that person has legs. You know what I mean? But yet, you know, they're, you know, or you see, is it Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump? You know, where it's just like, okay, I know he has legs. You know what I mean? Like, in real life, it's hard to really picture people that have been CGI'd into, you know, and I know how all the horror stuff is done. Like, when I see somebody's body parts get pulled off of them in a horror movie, and you see them laying there, I'm like, his legs are in the ground.
Right.
Or
right.
It's a CGI shot. You know what I mean? In this movie, it's like, oh my God, he really does not have legs. You know, or, oh my God, he really does not have arms. You know, right. And I think that is probably, you know, visually a lot creepier to know when you're going into this one and you're seeing that it's, you know, these are real people. So I think that helps a lot. I'm with you on the acting portion. You know, is this a well-acted movie? Yeah. You know, I would go, wah, wah. You know, but it still sounded like anything else that came out of that era. You know, if you compare it to The Black Cat, if you compare it to Little Rascals, if you compare it to, you know, just the way it sounded, the way that people talk to each other, things of that nature, it still fit in that same genre.
Right. I mean, the movies of that era seem to have, and I don't know if it's
style.
I wonder if it's almost because, you know, this was the debut era of talking in films. So I almost wonder if it was like people didn't really know that they could be more natural, that they were being like, you know, I need to talk to you like this, Steve, to make sure that, you know what I mean? Like,
it's almost like, it sounds like they do when you listen to an old serial, like a radio serial, or it's the War of the Worlds, you know, or whatever, you know, things like that. It sounds like they speak like that on camera as well.
Right.
You know, they don't, you know, it's like they're still coming onto that natural interaction.
Yeah, but I was able to be much more forgiving about that just because I knew that these people were not actors. I mean, there was a few obviously that were actors, but for the most part, you know, these people were not professional actors, so I was very forgiving in that sense.
Fair enough. Hefe?
Yeah, fair enough. I think you guys pretty much covered it. I didn't have much. I mean, it, give me, tell me if I'm wrong here, because listen, because I keep hearing people reference to go one of us, one of us. That was from this, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was necessarily from this.
One of us, gobble gobble, gobble gobble.
Yeah, actually, I do believe it was, but I'm not remembering where it was.
Or was there something else I haven't? Anyways, that was my question of the day.
I don't know. Maybe if somebody in the audience knows, they can let us know. But I'm not sure. Might have been.
So let us know. Shoot us an email. Joelmovies@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah, it was.
What?
No.
It was in this, yes. Gobble gobble, one of us.
Well, yeah, but I mean, was the reason for, because I always hear it as one of us, or something like that, instead of this one of us type thing.
Mm.
Maybe it was in something else in a different, you know, way of saying it or something like that. I don't know. Anyways, what we've learned, don't piss off the freaks. Nice little tale of circus freaks. Little disturbing, probably more disturbing to people in the 1930s, though.
Yeah, I mean, it felt more like a soap opera, but I actually did get into it. I'm really glad, and I really got into the fact that they used the real people instead of actors for the most part for all the sideshow people. Something that I can't ever see them doing in today's Hollywood, but I think it would make an awesome reality show, one that I might actually consider watching.
Right. That's interesting. Sure, it's not the traditional horror movie necessarily from today's standard, but I think it's very thought-provoking for a lot of the reasons we talked about. And again, not one of these people was CGI. They were actually the real deal. You know, in some ways, according to today's standard, was it exploitative? Sure. And the acting wasn't amazing. But it's definitely worth seeing if you're a fan of horror and you want to see where horror has come from, you know, and see where it's evolved today. So go see it. See it.
Yeah, pop over to Amazon. It's a rental of $2.99. That's easy. Moving on into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The Thing. Directed by some Norwegian guy. Starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Joel Egerton, and some other Norwegian guy.
Wow.
Oh, I don't think that's the Norwegian guy. I think that's the black guy, but
That's the black guy? Okay. That's the black guy? But I don't think he should have.
He was also in Major League.
Yeah.
let me just say this. Like, near the beginning, as they were flying in on the mm-hmm. on the helicopter in, they said, you don't want to get stuck here. You don't want to be stuck here with a whole bunch of Norwegian guys. And I just thought to myself, yes, I do.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I saw Lars, and I'm like, yes, I do. That's who should we have as credit on this film, is the guy who played Lars.
I see that me and Jeff were on the exact same wavelength, because I was pretty much the same way. I was like, ooh, Lars. And then, like, you know, when they said that line, I was just like, you know, other than the big flesh rending monster, I wouldn't mind being stuck up there for interesting little thing about this. All right, so I saw this movie yesterday, and when I got done seeing it, I almost immediately came home and watched the one from 1982.
Uh-huh. Okay. The immediate follow-up.
Well, interesting thing, too, because, you know, as I was doing research and stuff, I was kind of watching it and doing research. They did an amazing job of, if you were to, like, just put these two movies back to back, you would have a hard time knowing that they were made so far apart.
Yeah, 30 years apart, yeah.
Because they literally run right into each other. And there's crazy little things that, like, you'll see in the one from 82 that you're like, oh, okay. Now, you know, like you didn't even really think about it when you saw that one the first time, but now it's like, oh, we got to see how that got to be that way. All right. So I almost kind of wondered, like, it made me a little more forgiving because I did know that this was going to be a prequel. I do knew that this had to do with a Norwegian camp. But with that being said,
yeah, I wasn't really sure if it was going to end up being something happening concurrently, or mm-hmm. if it, you know, I wasn't sure. So I didn't realize going into it was a pure prequel,
right?
You know, either.
So. Oh, and it pretty much is. So I'm assuming. I don't know. I'm assuming, Steve, you've seen the 1982.
Yeah,
which is actually a remake of a movie.
Yeah, of them from 60.
51. Yeah. Jeff, did you see the one from
1980? No, I was thinking about watching it when I got home because it's streaming on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Then I decided to watch Star Trek anyways. But anyway.
Oh. Well, you know what? Even with this movie fresh in your mind, I would recommend watching it. Just at least the first 45 minutes. Because there'll be a lot of things where you'll be like, wow, the people who made this one did their due diligence in like making sure things matched up, you know? So in that aspect, I think the movie was great, but I do have some issues with some of the other things in the movie. Namely, I felt like, well, obviously, having seen the one from 1982, there's really no suspense for someone like me. I know what happens.
Agreed. As far as the prequel goes, you know how it's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you just don't know. You know, you don't know how some things got there, but now that you've seen the original, it's like it all makes sense. It's kind of like, as we're going to see, you know, all the paranormal activities, it's all like, oh, it's all connected now. You get the, you know, you get the interconnectedness.
Yeah, I guess with this type of movie, though, it's one of those where I felt like you really didn't need to know all the particulars. Like, you kind of got the gist of what happened from the other movie. And you were just kind of like, oh, okay. The other things I had, and this was after I read a couple other reviews for this film because I wanted to see, you know, it's getting pretty bad critic reviews. So I wanted to see, because I actually enjoyed the film, I wanted to see what people were sort of ripping it apart for. And obviously you've got the people whose gut reaction is, you know, how dare they revisit this material? The one from 1982 was like the perfect movie, blah, 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 blah.
John Carpenter give this his blessing.
You know what? The one from 1982 was a good film, but it wasn't the most perfect film ever made. I'm sorry. But there were some little problems in this one. Like, why would you have, you've got this monster, right? And it can imitate and is trying to hide. You know, it doesn't want to be caught, basically. Why would it suddenly, when it's in a helicopter escaping, why would it suddenly attack and cause said helicopter to crash when it could have just kept to itself and made it out of there?
Yeah. Good point.
Here's
a question.
That.
Here's a question is, was he trying to hide or was he hungry?
Yeah, you know what? They never really address that. In the other movie, they make it sound like it's more of an infection. That, like, even though it's this creature, that it's more of an infection than
and it kind of is, because in this movie, they look at the blood and you see these cells just trying to mimic other cells.
Right, and you see that
procreation.
You see that scene. Basically, what happens is the first 45 minutes of this movie are very sort of, I'm not going to say completely unique, but it's like at that point is when it starts to become like a almost redo of the 82 one. Like all the things, all the elements of the 82 one.
Yeah, they're going through a lot of the same stuff. Exactly.
Right. You know. So, I mean, I almost want to say that this was an attempt at like, okay, we could do a really, really awesome job with the creature in this one because of the advancements that we've made in you know, CGI and just movie tech in general. We could do some things that maybe, you know, they wanted to do in the 82 one. And the stuff that they were doing in the 82 one was considered amazing at the time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was like, well, how could we do this without blatantly ripping it off? And it's like, well, there was this other camp, and we could just, you know, go through and tell what happened to there. And, you know, I almost get that kind of feeling, like somebody wanted to redo this film. But in order to get off the remake moniker, they were like, well, we have, you know, this other camp that we can tell their story, and then we can claim, you know, we're not a remake. And
yeah, well, according to the trivia, the producers convinced Universal Studios to allow them to create a prequel to John Carpenter's The Thing instead of a remake, as they felt Carpenter's film was already perfect, so making a remake would be painting a mustache on the Mona Lisa. However, the prequel still has the title of the original film because they couldn't come up with the subtitle. For example, The Thing Begins. That sounded good.
Right.
That's fair. I guess if you, and like you said, if you kind of put them back to back, you know, it would all be The Thing.
Well,
it's not like it's particularly.
Yeah, and one of the things.
A New Hope. The Thing, The New Hope.
and they still tried to keep some sort of consistency. Like, right. Whenever a flashlight or lantern was flashed toward the camera, they would have the same blue camera flares coming off of them just as the original John Carpenter version. Also, the red axe that Joel Edgerton's character uses and eventually sticks into the wall can be seen still stuck in the wall when the Americans visit the Norwegian camp in the original John Carpenter version.
Yes, and the creature that Adam gets morphed into with the two heads, that is the creature they pull, you know, out of the camp and bring back to theirs. Mm-hmm. You know, so I guess they did their due diligence and was like, what elements do we have to make sure happen so that, you know, it was almost down to the thing where I was like looking at the holes in the wall in the set and being like, wow, they actually like pretty much did recreate that set from 82. And
maybe that was what the exercise of the movie was for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were like, well, you know, it'd be awesome to do The Thing again. And they're like, well, you know, The Thing we've done before, but here's something that would be interesting. So we could at least use The Thing with the new effects, but let's do a prequel and make sure that it really connects between the two movies and make sure everything matches. And it's more of an exercise on filming what happened before, where you see the end result in the next movie. So, if that makes any sense. So, I think that that's a very interesting exercise in film work. I mean, it's like the exercises like Psycho, the remake of Psycho, which was a shot-for-shot remake. I just think that's a really interesting exercise in filmmaking.
Agreed.
And maybe that's all this was just an exercise in filmmaking.
Well, they did a good job.
I think so.
They get an A. Now, when it came to how they determined who was a thing, what did you guys ultimately think of that? There were a lot of snickers in the audience, and I went with a group of about 8 people to go see this on a Sunday afternoon with the Bears.
Oh, okay.
And that was probably the funniest part, because you can only imagine what people were saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you really you? You know, do you still have your PA? You know, you know, they were, do you still have your nipple piercings? You know, they were like, oh, it's really you. You know, they were like, I was laughing at people because they were being so stupid about it. But, you know, for it to be that obvious, like, I guess I didn't realize it, because, you know, I did notice that he had his ear pierced at one point. It was like he had his, you know, that ear was like pointed toward the camera, so you couldn't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at some point, like, and it wasn't a huge like pirate ring. It was just a little dinky 1982.
Right.
Is he gay or is he straight?
It was, you know, left. Which, so
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It was like, which ear is it in? Mm-hmm. Kind of piercing. Like, I was a rock star at one point, piercing.
Yes.
You know, but what did you guys think of that methodology?
Well, I'm glad they came up with something other than doing the blood test from the 182.
Yeah.
You know. I'm getting all confused. I want to say the first one, but the one in 82 wasn't the first one.
That's right. Yeah, that's true.
So I'm like, no. But yeah, I it was a little weird, that whole sequence with them checking fillings and all that stuff. But I mean, I was okay with it for the, you know.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. Now, the other thing that threw me, that I wasn't particularly excited about, was what they did with the arms.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought originally, and I could be wrong, I thought there was supposed to be one thing.
Mm.
Okay? And it felt like in this movie, it was replicating constantly, not so much taking over people, you know, because it wasn't like it was one person. It was always like there was one person that was the thing, and then there was somebody else ready to become the thing, or somebody was already infected. I couldn't quite tell what was going on with it. It felt like every corner it was like, this person's infected, that person's infected. And look, now it's spawned two arms,
mm-hmm.
the individual things. I'm like, right. I'm like, holy cow. It, you know, I wasn't quite
creating.
Yeah, I suppose, but
yeah, no, they sort of talked about that in the 82 one, that every individual piece of this creature is really a creature on and of itself.
Okay, that's fair enough about that. Okay,
so that's where they're talking about. That's how they came up with the blood test in the 82 one, because he's like, you know, it doesn't matter that it's disconnected. You know, it's going to try to defend itself when I stick it with this hot poker, so it's going to react. So yeah, they sort of addressed that. I think they just took it. They took it to the sort of next level with being able to animate things and show things moving on. They did do it a little bit in the 82 one with, like, there's the scene where the guy, you know, they made it more like if a piece of it, like, cause they always were happen to be killing a piece of it.
Right.
And a piece of it would come off and go scurry off, and then it'd be like, oh no, it's still alive, you know. Where this was more like there's more than one, or there could be more than one, you know. But they talk about that in the 82 one, because they're like, you know, if this thing gets out, there's going to be, you know, all the people on the planet are going to be things in 27,000 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fair enough. And the other thing that I thought was just a tad unrealistic,
mm-hmm.
was the use, like how controlled all the fire burns were from that huge, you know, flamethrower,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Especially inside. You know, it's like they just engulf the entire room in flame.
So they go.
Yeah, and then they just keep walking, and you know, and it's the only place. I mean, they must have built that place really well.
Yeah, they did a lot more running around with fire extinguishers in the 82 one. They would light stuff on fire, and then they would run in with fire extinguishers and put it out.
Yeah.
So,
but in this one, it was just like burn. But then I'll just saunter through the rest of the place because the fire is not going to follow me anywhere, you know, or burn other areas. It's just going to stay in this one little area that I put it in. I don't think that's realistic. But
yeah,
that was a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, there were times when, like, it's hard because one of the mechanics in this movie is the fact that when somebody's off screen, that's the opportunity for them to be turned into a thing.
You know
what I mean?
Yep.
But there are times, like, again, I go back to the helicopter crash. Like, I felt like when the helicopter crashed, I wanted to see what was going on. Like, that was where we should have been. Like, we should have sat a scene with that, what was going on in that helicopter, more than just them crashing. And but I know that it's like it's sort of counterintuitive, because it's like, oh, but you don't know. Did it survive? Did it, you know, are all three of the people in there now things, you know? So I don't know. That was my major beef with it, but I enjoyed it for the most part.
But we don't know what happened to the two other bodies, that's for sure.
We don't know what happened to her.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe she's running off to the Russian camp and we're going to see another movie.
I thought they found her in the... I think they find her.
Mm-mm.
In the 82 version, don't they? With the keys Mm-mm. in her hands?
No, that's... I don't think so. Because they go...
I'm going to have to watch it again. I'm going to have to watch it again because I believe they did.
Maybe I need to change my
I'm like,
last movie for next week.
No, I'm going to watch it again. I will watch it again. Don't worry. I'll debate you.
Okay.
That's just, but I'm like, I don't remember. Remembering.
Mm-hmm. No.
But that's it.
That's good. So, what have we learned? We have learned to watch where we park the snowcat.
Amen.
That was scary. I'm like, how the hell did they get out of there?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Falling onto the spaceship.
Apparently, the Cavaliers are a basketball team. Barely. Speaking of which, Lars, he doesn't speak English, but he will work like a bear.
Mm. Yeah, I'm okay with him. He doesn't have to speak English. It's obvious. They'll understand each other just fine.
Never a good idea to shoot the guy with the flammable gas tank strapped to him.
Never.
And it's freaking cold in Antarctica. Mm. That just said cold in here, but
freaking.
There we go. In any case, I scrolled down too far. Not that bad of a movie. Had its jumpy moments, but it's all right. I say it's a wait for DVD though.
Yeah, I'm going to say there's some really stupid plot points or lack of plot points in this movie. And if you've seen the 82, I'm going to call it a remake. There's nothing really to learn from this, but I think they did an excellent job of tying the movies together. If you're a John Carpenter purist, you're probably going to hate it. So I don't know. I think it'd be a kind of a fun date movie to go see with somebody, maybe.
You know,
yeah.
I'll admit that I didn't realize it was a prequel. My bad. The creature effects were really, really good, although a large portion of the movie was actually really predictable if you've seen the other versions. I enjoyed it just sitting back and watching it. You know, definitely was worth it. I liked seeing it in the theater. Thought it was a fun ride, but you know, I definitely want to see it again to see if I pick up on anything else when it comes out on DVD. I'm not going to run back out and see it in the movies, though.
A fun ride, Lars. Into the future.
Hi, welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
In the future, we're talking about the third installment of the Underworld series, Underworld Awakening.
Third or fourth?
By two guys with names that I can't pronounce except for Bjornson. I can say that one, but I don't know what the first one is.
This is the episode filled with lots and accents.
Mons Marland.
Yes.
That's my guess at how to pronounce that first name. Bjornson, I'm sure I got that one right. Because I remember Bjorn Toulouse from one of the Carmen Sandiego games.
Mm.
Anyways. Starring Kate Beckinsale, Michael Ealy, and India Isley.
Yeah, this is the fourth.
Oh, this is
when
the fourth?
When you said that, I was like...
I thought it was the third.
No, yeah, there was Underworld
Evolution. Rise of Lycan.
Evolution was...
Oh, Evolution.
That's when she... That's when she brought back the old vampire. And then Rise of the Lycans was when he got mixed with Evolution vampire was blood. Yeah. Sorry.
I watched all of them, but...
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, didn't mean to interrupt.
What's it about?
It is about Vampire's Warrior Selene. Do you know the Selene girl? I don't know if we know her. Anyways. escapes imprisonment to find herself in a world where humans have discovered the existence of both vampires and lycan clans and are conducting an all-out war to eradicate them. So it ends up becoming a three-way.
Interesting.
Large.
A rather furry three-way. I'm going to admit, I saw the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not impressed by the first one enough to watch any of the other ones.
Really?
Yeah, I don't remember particularly caring for the first one at all. I mean, when did the first one come out?
2003.
Yeah.
It's been like 2003, 2006, 2009, 2012. It's going to be like every third year.
Every 3 years. Yeah.
Hey, just like the Star Wars movies anyways.
Yeah, but it's like it's been close to a decade since the first one. Yeah, and I saw it when it came out. I saw it at the theater, and so I don't even really remember a whole lot about it, to tell you the honest truth. So I know it had the whole vampire I remember there being older vampires that were sleeping.
Yep.
And were there werewolves in the first one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where you learn about their disdain fighting for one another. Yeah.
Because it was basically about, you know, the war between vampires and werewolves.
Right. And that's falls in love with Michael.
Right. So it was the Twilight before Twilight.
Something like that. Except with more action and actually.
Kate Beckinsale is kind of a badass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In these movies.
And the vampires don't sparkle.
Yeah, there's no sparkling.
They burn.
Well, okay. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure you guys knew that I have not seen any of the other movies.
That's okay. I didn't particularly care for the whole series, but I've liked them enough. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I've liked it enough to go see it. I thought, the last one was not my favorite, but had some interesting plot points.
Right.
I've been looking forward to seeing if another one was going to come.
I think these to me are along the lines of Resident Evil level.
Sure. I could see that.
They're action, they're fun movies. Are they great scripts with interesting characters and everything? Not really.
Yeah,
but it's fun to watch.
I think my issue with this series, I'm sort of a vampire purist. Like, I like the old school kind of stuff, you know, like I love, you know, Interview with the Vampire, and I love like True Blood, because it, even though it's vampires in modern day, it's still, they have a lot of the sensibilities of the mythology in there.
Yeah.
It's not like a total action fest, which I'm cool with, but I think that's kind of why I sort of am like kind of lukewarm on it, you know.
Maybe
I will admit that I am very lukewarm on the Blade series as well. So,
The first one was good.
Yeah, the first the one rest I enjoyed. Of
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Next year we're going to have to do vampires as a theme for October or something.
Or something to that effect.
Technically. Yeah. But
well, what did you think of when you watched this trailer? I guess not looking at the past necessarily. Did the trailer grab your attention?
Well, I mean, to be honest, my first thought was, oh, they made another one.
Oh, okay.
That was my first impression. But I mean, they always look good.
Yeah.
The one before this one, The Rise of the Lycans.
Yeah.
I think that one actually caught my attention more, only because was that set in the same time period or was it set in the past?
A prequel to the first two Underworld films, this fantasy explains the origins of the feud between the vampires and the Lycans, right. Aided by a secret Sonia, a courageous Lucian, Michael Sheen, leads the Lycans in battle against brutal vampire King Victor.
Okay. Going back on my whole, like, I enjoy like the sort of old school stuff, I think that one pulled me in more because it was taking place in the past. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have the Matrix-y Resident Evil-ish sort of sheen on it.
But you didn't like the second one when Celine like blows out the floor?
I didn't see the second one, honey.
Oh, sorry. Damn. That's my favorite scene, where she's trying to get away, and she's like, I don't know how to get away, and she just goes, blows out the floor and falls through.
Well, maybe before, I mean, how much time we got before this comes out?
Yeah.
Maybe we're going to have we're going to have to maybe revisit some in the series.
I'll put it on the list. That's what it's there for.
Truth. But yeah, but I really like the trailer. So, you know, I like the first one. Some of the second one was not great, but I like where they were going with it. The third one was interesting, but definitely kind of a far cry from the way the first two were. And this one seems to be bringing it back to the first.
Right.
The first one. And now, you know, because, yeah, pretty much they lived in the shadows of humans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they try to explain in the third one, they try to explain how, you know, how everything split.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vampires come from one side of the family. Yeah. You know, but I think it's interesting. I like the action too, but I agree with you. I think they're in the Resident Evil vein in the fact that it's all kind of way out there, CGI effecty, bullet timey,
right?
This and that, you know, that kind of stuff. It's going to be fantasy, and I think that's kind of, you know, kind of what I like about it too. And it's, you know, it's also with Celine in it and all stuff. You know, it's a badass chick flick,
right?
So again, I don't hate a badass chick flick.
No, I'm totally. That's one of the reasons why I think I wanted to see the first one, because it's like, it's vampires, and B, the main character is this chick, and it should be.
She jumps from a building and lands on one, you know, like that, the iconic underworld, you know, thing.
Well, you know, and the other thing is too that the one of my favorite vocalists and musicians of all time contributed to the Underworld soundtrack from the first one. So that was another thing that got me, like, I'm like, okay, well, if he attached his name to this project, then, you know, it's got to be at least worth a look. You know, which is Maynard Keenan, by the way.
Intriguing.
So. Yep.
Okay. So the excitement. I'm still interested in the series. Although, only expecting just another action movie featuring vampires and werewolves. That's all I'm expecting.
Yeah, and I'm sort of, like I said, I'm lukewarm. Interest in this series never made it past the first one for me, which I barely remember. I suppose I'd go see this. My only worry is that am I going to need to watch all the other ones to understand what's going on?
Probably not.
Yeah.
I think it's just one of those where each of these movies are individual movies, maybe there's something about what happened the previous episode, but I don't think you need to watch the rest of them.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the character of Celine. I think it's interesting. Her evolution is interesting. Not to mention, typically, it's like vampires and werewolves in the same movie. I'm so there.
You know, it's not typically Twilight.
Exactly. Although Kellan Lutz is hot. the third one kind of tarnished me on the series, I guess, you know, so much. But I hope this will bring it back in, and I'll see it either way. I don't care if I don't see it in the theater. I'll see it on DVD. It's a movie I will see.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Okay. Gotcha.
Alrighty. Excellent. So that's it for this episode of COL Movies. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Let us know what you think about any of these movies and any of our previous movies by going to our website, COLmovies.com. I was about to say my work's website. I guess. Wow.
No plugs for work.
Sorry, I've got this lotsy in my head that I tell people. Yeah, go to our website. Anyways. Also, you can shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Please feel free to leave us a voicemail. We love those at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Please leave a message so that our voicemail doesn't expire. Twitter.com/COLmovies. Facebook.com/COLmovies. Also, please pop into iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. We would very much appreciate it. Next week. In the past, we're taking a look at American Werewolf in London. Speaking of werewolves, in the present, Paranormal Activity 3, which I could go see tonight, but there's a reason why I'm not. And last but not least, Contraband will be our trailer. Final thoughts.
Keep your damn dirty feet off the seats, people. Ugh, drives me crazy.
Sorry. Get out and see some scary movies.
Yep. It's Halloween, man. It's
fun. It's Rent Insidious. You know watch the Paranormals.
Yeah, get watch scared. Those in preparation. Also, you know, pop onto Netflix. You can go, you know, search a random movie and let's see here. Interview with a Vampire is on Netflix streaming right now. Let Me In. AVP2. Sorry, it was just there. Looking at stuff that was screened. The original Let the Right One In is on Netflix streaming.
There you go. That's a good one.
So that's one. They've got plenty of movies on DVD as well, including The Howling Reborn. Sleepy Hollow. Remember that? I love that one.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe Shaun of the Dead's not on streaming. Zombieland. What other things? Jennifer's Body. Although I never really said that. Psycho. That was just by going. I was searching for Underworld. Underworld. It gives you the genre links, and then you can just click one of the genres that's under one of your favorite movies and go in. Horror movies, what I select. There's werewolf movies. So there's got to be a couple of Howlings. Trick or Treat is on Netflix streaming. Something called Ginger Snaps the Beginning. Oh, Wolfen.
Ooh, there you go.
And then there's Werewolf of London, a 1935 movie.
Oh, so if you want something
that's a classic werewolf movie, so you check that out. So, with that, for me, for Fuzz, for Steven, Lars.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard. And you stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.